From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Jackie Leiden. One of France's great men of letters, the poet Louis Aragon, once wrote, "It's impossible to discuss the intellectual history of the early 20th century without discussing Nancy Cunard." And yet most of us have never heard of Nancy Cunard, let alone brought her up in conversation. But if we were chatting with Ezra Pound or Pablo Neruda, T.S. Eliot, Samuel Beckett or James Joyce, they'd know who she was. She was a lover of the first three, Nobel laureates all. An heiress to the Cunard shipping line's fortune, she was a wild socialite and trendsetter. But there, any comparison to Paris Hilton ends. Nancy Cunard renounced money and entitlement to champion social causes, such as the plight of the American Negro or the Spanish Resistance. She was in her own right an accomplished poet, and her Hours Press was a masterpiece of publishing small and important works. But if we do not know her today, it may be due to her sad and largely forgotten end. Now a new book, Nancy Cunard, Heiress, Muse, Political Idealist, returns Cunard to the coterie and causes with whom she kept company. The book's author, Lois Gordon, joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking at a photograph of her, and of course, she had really strong, strong looks. She liked to paint black coal around her eyes, and she African bracelets and bakelite from her wrist to her elbow. She was striking. She was over 6 feet tall. But other than all of these, what we might call female attributes, she had a mind that was incredible. And let's talk about that.
Well, I think it really is true that she was a poet. Virginia Woolf published her at the Hogarth Press. She wasn't recognized at the time as a poet. She was recognized as a beautiful heiress, which really drove her mad because she wanted to be recognized in her own right. And she was so very well read because she had spent such a wretched childhood by herself and had nothing to do but read all the time.
She's a multilingual poet.
Yes.
Who also is a generous, generous friend to some of the best creative minds of her time. And she begins in London this with a bunch of others, this little coterie that they call the corrupt coterie.
Yes.
And they drink all night and they dive naked into the Thames and they really have a good time.
They have a very good time. They experiment sexually as well.
Goes without saying that the corrupt coterie.
Yes, I guess so. I guess it does. But I have to qualify that during World War I, when she was involved both with the poets, her life was really divided between her serious concerns with poetry and her play with the corrupt coterie. World War I was occurring, and Nancy could not tolerate the mentality of the times, which was it was only patriotic and wonderful to die for your country. And she was very guilty about the fact that the soldiers were injured so catastrophically, and she and her friend Iris Tree used to entertain the soldiers before they went off to battle, and they would listen to their talking about the trench warfare and coming upon these rats that were supposedly as large as cats, and how they wished they could get what they called a blimey wound, which would mean that they could just be taken out and taken to a hospital, but they wouldn't have to stay in service. And so she and Iris read poetry to them and drank with them and had sex with them, which William Carlos Williams described Nancy as an ascetic voluptuary. He said it was all cerebral, and she was performing a ritual just as they carried various talismans into war to keep them alive. The girls did this to sort of keep them alive.
Nancy Cunard falls in love with a British officer who's later killed.
Yes.
And after the war, moves to Paris, and she publishes three of her own books of poetry called Parallax, Sublunary, and Outlaws.
Right. Well, she received wonderful reviews, and at the same time, when Outlaws, for example, was published, the reviewers focused on the hat she was wearing in the photo they had rather than her poetry. And although the serious press and the serious magazines gave her very high marks for her poetry. She was discouraged because George Moore, the not-so-well-remembered today author of Esther Waters, had said there is talent and there is genius. And genius is something you're born with, but talent is something you have to work at. And, my dear, you better work at it. And he published this, and it really hurt her to the core. And because her mother said, why don't you do something with your life? Why is your life amounting to nothing? She left Paris and moved to Normandy and opened a printing press, which was enormously successful, and published Samuel Beckett, for example, first time he was published.
She stops the Hours Press after its wonderful run because she falls in love with an American black musician named Henry Crowder. And this is a major turning point in the life of Nancy Kennard.
Yes, it is. Henry Crowder told her, educated her about racism in America. And Nancy knew nothing about this. And she formed a one-person civil rights movement, in a sense. What she did was devote the next couple of years to studying the writings of black peoples throughout the world. And in 1934, she published a remarkable book called Negro that discusses the accomplishments and the history of African people, not only in Africa, but in different parts of the world. And the book was the first of its kind.
And as for all the tremendous achievement in this, even just looking at a picture of it in your book, Nancy Kennard takes a tumble in her life after Negro and through meeting Henry Crowder because her family cuts her off. She travels with Crowder to New York, and she's repudiated everywhere.
Yes, and after that, Nancy's mother just cut her off. I mean, Nancy was born an heiress, and she died penniless.
For the rest of her life, she would champion the underdog, the lost cause, certainly the Spanish Civil War, and the resistance there. That too, though, because Franco did remain in power, would really hurt her.
Oh. I really think that Nancy's final demise was due to the fact that she could not tolerate the fact that Franco was the one fascist who got away. And Nancy went there as, you know, to defend democracy against fascism.
But also as a journalist for the Manchester Guardian.
As a journalist for the Manchester Guardian. And she, after the war, after Franco took over in 1939, she walked with the refugees out of Spain into France and to the what were called holding centers around Perpignan. They were not holding centers, they were concentration camps. She wrote about these camps, but when she could, she bribed, it's hard to even imagine this, she bribed some of the guards at the camps and took soldiers out and took them to her home in France. She went to Central America to try to find them safe haven. She was remarkable in her heroism. She was a little skinny, really very thin woman and very fragile and very ill. I mean, from her 20s on, she suffered from severe rheumatism and from severe asthma, which later turned into emphysema and did her in.
When you write about the last 5 years of her life, it's heartbreaking. It's no one would want the kind of end that she endured. She has these breakdowns where she dies, despite the intervention of some friends, alone and penniless.
Yes, it was really, really very heartbreaking. She was drinking a great deal. There were 3 days, nobody really knows what happened to her, but she was found in Paris, face down by the police, and she was put into a charity hospital. When she came to, she asked for a pencil and paper, and she wanted to write some poems, and she went into a coma, and she just died.
Well, I think that you have brought her back to our consciousness and back to life and back to the prominent place in history that she deserves.
Thank you so much.
Lois Gordon is the author of Nancy Kennard, Heiress, Muse, Political Idealist. Thanks very much, Lois Gordon.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And to see a picture of Nancy Kennard taken by avant-garde photographer Man Ray, check out our website, npr.org.